Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimebo.
Yes, hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with NFL Shop Europe. And we are sponsored by DraftKings.co.uk, your home of one-day fantasy sports. I'm your host, Neil Reynolds, and joining me live from the jungles of Costa Rica, it's Jeff Rimebold. Jeff, it's going to be one of those with the parrots singing in the background and the monkeys screeching. Fantastic. How are you?
I'm good, mate. Parrotcast is back. You know, there's some similarities between us this morning, Neil. I got strong coffee. You got strong coffee. It's probably raining in London. It's raining here in Costa Rica. And, wow, what an NFL weekend.
It was
tremendous. Tremendous on Regent Street again. Tell me, what was your highlight of the Colts-Jags game?
Well, actually, Jeff, you know, the whole weekend was just fantastic again. The British fans came out in force. I think Regent Street was a rainy day early in the morning, really raining heavily. Regent Street was absolutely packed from top to bottom with NFL fans. We had great alumni the whole day we were working. We had Dallas Clark and Gary Brackett from the Colts, Tony Boselli, Jeff Lagerman, Fred Taylor, Kyle Brady from the Jags. Both teams came out and were great. Pat McAfee absolutely stole the show on stage at Regent Street. And I tell you, it actually was really good. And there's some rock star in him there, Jeff, is Jim Irsay. Jim Irsay came on stage, kind of name dropped that he'd been hanging around with some of the Beatles. And I was like, well, as name drops go, that's not bad. Name dropped that he'd been hanging around with the Beatles. And then basically said he was going back to America to work as hard as he could to get London a franchise. That was how he felt. So it was a fantastic weekend. I did 6 hours on stage on Regent Street on Saturday afternoon. I'd hosted a fan forum in the morning with the commissioner of the NFL, Roger Goodell. I did 3 hours of the tailgate party on Sunday morning. I went into the stadium. I watched my boy get picked off and throw an interception. Andrew Luck get intercepted. Set up Jacksonville's touchdown. I watched the Jags score the touchdown. Then it was off to work. And I did 8 hours in the Sky Studios. So didn't get to see much of the game. But it was another fantastic, incredible weekend. The support, just when we say it all the time, it does continue to grow, Jeff.
Well, you know, this is my take from this side of the pond. And it's amazing, you know, when you have an owner come out and make the strong statement, you know, it's not like we're getting those, you know, milquetoast comments anymore about a franchise in London now. You know, you got an owner and a significant owner, a long-time owner in the NFL coming out and saying he's going to work to find a way to get a franchise in London. I think that is really, really a big step for us in all of our goals to have a team in London. And then, you know, when I watch the game, you know, just from a pure football standpoint, they are a flawed football team because they have one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL, and they can't protect him. He gets knocked down, hit, rushed, and it's really, really a shame because you're talking about a guy who has the abilities to take a team to a Super Bowl, and the supporting cast just is not there for him.
No, obviously he was missing Dante Moncrief at wide receiver, but that's not the problem, Jeff. You can, with a quarterback of Andrew Luck's caliber, you can plug in receivers, and I think you can make it work generally, especially in their offense. The problem, and I just wrote this for my weekly power rankings, the problem is the offensive line, Jeff, and general managers don't get on the hot seat quite as much as head coaches do, but I think that Ryan Grigson's got some explaining to do. Maybe not so much this year, because they did draft Ryan Kelly in the first round, at center, but this has been a neglected area for too long. And basically, the left tackle was just getting pushed back into the backfield the whole time I was watching.
Yeah, Costanzo, you know, you're watching, Neil, and you're exactly right. And I say when you evaluate anybody, you evaluate a body of work, not a single draft. Mm-hmm. And the reality is, for Grigson, he's been there long enough. They've had enough opportunity in free agency and in the draft to improve. Significantly improve, not just improve, but significantly improve an area of the football team that's, you know, really been a deficient area, and you know, and they haven't done it, and they're, you know, they're. I watched Pagano, how frustrated he is, and I know that, you know, I've been in those situations as a coach when you just have an area that can't perform, and particularly one as critical as the offensive line can't perform. But you look at the Colts as a team right now, too many mistakes, too many, you know, too many penalties, and, you know, I'm not just bad, I'm talking about bad penalties. Mm. And, you know, I thought Pagano was really, really frustrated at the end of that game as I watched it unfold.
Yeah, they couldn't get off the field, Jeff. Defensively, they gave up a lot of big penalties, which kept drives alive for the Jags. Just one thing you touched on then, when you said about Ryan Grigson being examined for a body of work. I put on Twitter yesterday, you know, reminding Browns fans they could have had Julio Jones back in the day, given what Julio had done on Sunday night, going for 12 catches for 300 yards and a touchdown. The Browns traded down. They picked up a lot of picks. They got five or six players, none of whom are in the NFL as of this moment. Brandon Whedon's a third-string quarterback in Houston. But apart from that, that's it with what the Browns did with those players. And I had quite a few responses saying, oh, well, hindsight's a great thing. But aren't personnel people judged with hindsight? Because that's... Aren't you supposed to look back and see how they've done?
Yeah, that's the only thing you can judge them by. I mean, it's present sight in that, hey, what are you doing for me now? But ultimately, those decisions that you make, and it's, you know, I read your piece on Cleveland. Actually, it was shocking, you know, and you think about all of those guys that not only aren't great players, certainly aren't Julio Jones caliber players, but you're talking about guys that aren't even playing now, aren't even in the National Football League now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I did a piece for our friends over at Gridiron Magazine where they asked me to rate the top receivers in the league, and I had Julio Jones with the top rated receiver in the league. And it's really a shame that it's taken so long for fans to kind of get a feel for him, because he plays in Atlanta, he's not in a major market, you know, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. But when you watch the guy play, you saw what he did to Carolina. And I thought McDermott tried about everything he could try to get him covered in the game, and they just could not cover him.
No, that was the, you know, to do what the Falcons have done offensively against the Saints and the Raiders was one thing. But, Jeff, to put up 48, and I know 7 came on defense at the end of the game, but to put up over 40 points on offense against the Carolina Panthers was incredible. I'm kind of with you in Julio. You know, it's whatever kind of floats your boat. It's a 1 and 1A. If it's Antonio Brown and the slipperiness and everything that he offers, or it's Julio Jones, as you said, who's a tight end playing wide receiver. And Jeff, really, when you look at Julio, I guess he doesn't get that attention because he isn't that kind of Odell Beckham type, the Dez Bryant type. He doesn't do a lot of talking. And actually, just when I said about him being a tight end there, I was on stage with Dallas Clark quite a bit over the weekend at various events. He must have had about 20 or 30 pounds on Dallas Clark. Dallas Clark was a tight end and Julio's a wide receiver.
Yeah. You know, let's talk about OBJ for a second, because here's a guy that better start to figure it out pretty fast.
Yeah.
Because, you know, his head coach the week before, after his incident on the sideline with the kicking net and all that, you know, nonsense that went on the sideline, comes out and says, all he says in the media is Odell needs to get his emotions under control, which is a very valid statement. And then you have to be able to read through what players say sometimes. But it was Beckham was almost defiant in that, well, I'm going to be who I am, and that's just me. And then I see the guy go out and he's in another incident, I mean, another meltdown after he gets pushed on the sideline. And the reality of it is, and you can, you know, I know there are a lot of guys that love him because he'll do all those circus one-hand catches before the game. He's got the hair and he's got all that. But the bottom line is the bottom line. He had 3 catches for 20-some yards, and he hurt his football team again. Mm. Again, he hurt his football team because he can't control his emotions. He is exactly what he said he was after the game. He's a guy that's been blessed with a lot of talent, but sadly he's been cursed with little maturity. And until he gets that figured out, Neil, you know, the Giants are going to struggle because he'll always be a distraction.
And this is, yeah, and Eli Manning actually came out and said that Odell's bringing a lot of this on himself. So, you know, he's starting to hear some negative stuff from within his own team. And Let's go back to December, Jeff. You and I were sat in the boardroom at NFL UK and we went through Odell Beckham for about 45 minutes. And at the time, both of us said, and this shouldn't be news to the New York Giants, there's your recipe for defending Odell Beckham for the rest of his career. Okay, he offers a physical challenge, but if you can get under his skin, you can distract him, you can negate some of what he's got to offer by attacking the mental side of him. Now, I did a Facebook Live event with Odell in London over the summer, Jeff, and he said that he's never felt the need to say sorry for anything. He has no regrets whatsoever about anything he's done in the NFL. So there's that kind of, again, there's that bit where you think there's no accountability and there's no kind of responsibility, and it needs the Giants, and maybe it's not the time to do it in the season now because it's too emotional, it's too much of a roller coaster. How do you fix somebody like that in the regular season? To me, he's an enigma. I said this on Sky a couple of weeks ago, Jeff. He wants to be great. He wants to be good. He talks about legacy all the time. If you watch, there's a clip doing the rounds on Twitter at the moment. After the national anthem in Minneapolis on Monday night, all the soldiers are walking off the field. There's one player going the other way, shaking hands with every military veteran, and it's Odell Beckham Jr. He's an enigma because he does one thing one moment where he's, you know, you'd be proud to have that kind of player on your team. And the next moment, he's picking a fight with a kicking net. It's hitting him in the head. He's sulking. He's getting 15-yard penalties. I mean, it's like day and night.
Well, you know, and the bottom line is, Neil, it's what you do, not before the game, not after the game, not what you say. It's what you do in the game. Mm. And right now, if you just put his numbers up against the other, quote, elite receivers in the National Football League, he's a contrived hype machine that isn't performing at a level that, you know, you say he's one of the best receivers in the league, then show me. Don't just, it's not about one catch. It's not about how you warm up. It's not about what you say. It's about what you put on tape. And right now, what he's putting on tape, and it sounds like I'm attacking the guy. I'm not attacking the guy. I'm attacking the behaviors, mm-hmm. right? And then after the game, when you come out and you say that you're targeted, that if you tie your shoes the wrong way, it's a penalty, that if you sneeze the wrong way, it's a penalty, you are acting like a petulant child. And let me tell you something now, and you know this very well. When defensive coordinators draw up game plans and they have these detailed scouting reports that you get in pro football, they know everything about you. They know what makes you tick. They know exactly what gets underneath your skin. And whatever it is, we say it all the time, whatever it is that hurts you or you can't do well or what, you're going to get it over and over and over again. So you look at the little things like the shove out of bounds and all of the talking that goes on. All they're trying to do there and consciously trying to do is get him off his game. And that's what they've been able to do. And until he figures it out and takes accountability and grows up, he's never going to be the receiver that he's capable of being and that we all want him to be in the NFL.
Well, you guys, you coaches always talk about, you know, stick with it, stick with the fight. This is going to be a long fight. It's going to be a long day. There's going to be peaks and valleys. You know, you can't be attacking a kicking net because things are going wrong. I was going to morph into Tom Hanks and say there's no crying in baseball then, Jeff, but there's no crying in the NFL. I mean, you deal with adversity and you move on. I mean, Mike Zimmer's team is the classic example of that. You find a way, you stick with it. It's 3.5 hours of attrition to get to a win at the end. You can't just, the minute something goes wrong, start to go into your shell or start to lose control?
Not if you're going to play at the highest level, you're not. You know, you have to have the ability to one snap and clear. Mm. And when you talk about one snap and clear, whether it's a drop, whether the quarterback misreads the play and you're wide open and he doesn't see you, or whether he overthrows you, or there's a sack on a play that you're open, you can't carry that into the next play. Mm. And particularly, you can't carry something that some player across from you says, because you have no control over that. You win by, and this is why the Vikings are getting it done right now. You win by taking care of the controllable factors and not wasting time or effort or energy on things you can't control. They don't have Adrian Peterson. You know, they don't have their Teddy Bridgewater. Mm. They don't worry about that. They just go ahead and play. And I think that's the difference between mentally tough, football teams and teams that are mentally fragile. And to me, the Giants are and have been for the last few years a mentally fragile football team.
Mm. It feels like we have talked about this quite a bit, but I don't feel like we're picking on Odell, Jeff. And like I said, I've met the guy a few times. I know what's kind of under the facade, if you will. And I think that deep down, you know, there's that goodness there to really make a difference and to be a good role model. And he kind of says one thing and then something else comes out. You know, I don't want to be a distraction to my teammates. And then he's climbing onto the roof of a car in Germany. And, you know, it's all being filmed on his camera phone. So, you know, it's one thing and then the other. But the reason we're talking about it, Jeff, is because it's a pattern of behavior.
Yeah, and let me make it clear. I want the guy to be everything he says.
Oh, he's fantastic.
The NFL needs more guys like him. The NFL needs more role models. It needs more, you know, guys that do what they say and not, you know, again. But the bottom line is you're based upon what you do, not what you say. Mm-hmm. You're evaluated on your performance. You're evaluated on how you handle yourself in every situation. I want the kid to grow up. But and I'm not a Giants fan. If I was a Giants fan, you know, I look at all that potential and all of it. He's exactly like he's been given so much, which is his post-game press conference. He said, I've been given so much ability, so much opportunity. So, well, take advantage of it now. Don't waste it. Mm. And right now, when you look at numbers, and I'm only going by his numbers, you look at his numbers, and you're saying, that is not an elite wide receiver's numbers in the National Football League.
No, well, you have to go by the numbers. That's what it's all about. It's about the production. It's about winning. Jeff, they often stick a headline on the front of iTunes that refers to what's in this podcast. I can already see it now. OBJ is a contrived hype machine. Brackets Jeff Reinbold. I like it. You're talking in there.
It sounds like we're just, you know, downing the kid and bashing the kid. I'm not bashing the guy. I'm just saying, hey, I'm bashing the behavior. No different than when I hear that Dez Bryant's missed 20 to 40 meetings in his time at Dallas. I mean, come on, guys. You know,
those kinds of guys,
they make it so difficult to, because they, I don't care how many great guys you got around them, they are constantly a distraction at every level in the organization. And they are talented, yes. There is no question. They are. Dez Bryant is one of the greatest receivers in the game, physically gifted beyond what, you know, almost beyond measure. But yet, when you hear these things, and then the owner comes out and says, well, God only knows how many meetings he's missed, then you're endorsing a behavior that is not, I mean, Jason Garrett has done so well just holding that thing together because there's 50-some other guys in that room that are going to meetings, that are doing the right things, that are studying, that are preparing, that are doing all. They look at the quote, superstar, who apparently just feels he's exempt from being on time and, you know, doing his work.
Yeah, I remember last year when Dez had that locker room kind of meltdown and they panned around the locker room and there peering through the curtain was Jason Garrett looking with a just, like, ashen-faced, was like, what's going on now? And Jeff, the problem is with some of these guys is they are superstar talents, as you say, and then maybe they miss meetings or they have these other issues which kind of hold them back to the point where when they're finished with their career, they might look back and say, I didn't take full advantage. Then contrast that with a couple of guys I spent the weekend with. Gary Brackett was an undrafted free agent, a walk-on at Rutgers, an undrafted free agent. Becomes the defensive captain of the Colts. He plays 5 straight years over 100 tackles. He's a Super Bowl champion. You've got Dallas Clark, who came from tiny little Livermore, Iowa, which had a population of 377 people. He goes on to be an All-Pro, a Pro Bowler, a Super Bowl champion. So you need that work ethic and that desire. If you get the superstar talent, you put them together. You've got Jerry Rice, but there are very few of them out there.
Yeah, and you know, here's the problem. We're the problem, you know. We're the problem.
Right.
We're the problem. I'm talking about not just you and me, the media. We're the problem. When we spend all this time talking about guys like that, instead of spending time talking about guys like Larry Fitzpatrick, you know, or as you said, Jerry Rice, or all of the other guys who do it the right way. Mm. And some of them that you know, I mean, look at Larry Fitzpatrick's numbers.
Yeah. Oh, Larry Fitzgerald. Yeah, Fitzgerald's been off the charts for years.
Let's look at the body of work. And there's a guy that's everything that you want right there. But do we talk about it? No, we spend time talking about these other guys.
Mm, true, that is true. And we are all guilty of that, Jeff, because Odell Beckham Jr.'s warm-up is the most televised event in sports, I think, now.
Well, and see, you know what? That feeds the whole thing. And you know what I'm saying is that this is the trickle-down that you don't get. Now I'm starting to see on college football today and college football highlight shows, I'm starting to see college kids mimicking that same one-handed, you know, pregame warm-up thing. I watch it in the CFL. Now I'm starting to see receivers in the CFL going out there and doing that pregame. Again, what is your legacy? You want to leave a legacy, leave the right one. Mm. Leave the right one. You control that. Nobody else controls that. Not the media, not the commissioner, you know, not your coordinator, not anybody but you. And again, if you truly want to leave that legacy, then let's go leave it. And I'm pulling for the kid. I really hope he figures it out.
Yep, I agree. As you probably gathered, listeners, we don't cover every game on Inside the Huddle. We do like to get into the issues of the week, and that's what we are doing today, and we do every week, and we thank you for joining us for that. Jeff, I've got a couple of others. Just on thanking people for joining us, had a lot of positive comments from the fans around Regent Street and at the tailgate party, appreciating what we do on this podcast, but we certainly feel the same way, don't we?
Yeah, you know what? It's so awesome, and you know, every time somebody hits you on Twitter or you get a positive feedback, you really recognize how much fun it is to be able to do this. I'm looking forward. You know, we've got 5 weeks left in our season. I'm really looking forward to getting over there and doing this with you in the studio on a weekly basis, and then hopefully again we'll have an opportunity to take it on the road because it was such a big hit last year when we took Inside the Huddle on the road, and I know the people out in Ireland are clamoring.
Oh my goodness, Jeff, that's what I was just about to say to you, is that the only other thing that people constantly were saying, we're kind of lobbying for their cities. It's like, when's Jeff coming back? Can you guys get on the road again? And can you come here? And can you come there? And I'm like, listen, we'll come wherever they put us on a bus or a plane or however we get there. We're happy to talk about it when we get there. So that was great. Jeff, some surprising 3-1 teams. Let's just talk about these for a minute, because coming into the season, I don't know if we'd have said, especially after opening weekend, the Rams would be 3-1. Dallas this year, last year they imploded without Tony Romo. This year they're surviving and even thriving with Dak Prescott. They're 3-1. The Falcons are 3-1, Jeff. And what a beatdown. I was going to say they put on the Panthers, but they still needed a pick six inside the last 2 minutes to win the game. That's how crazy today's NFL is. And the Raiders are 3-1. Let's have a look at some of those more surprising 3-1 teams.
Yeah, you know, you look at them and you say, first of all, when Romo went down, if you'd have taken bets, you're not going to find, even the most ardent Cowboy fan is not going to say they're going to be 3-1 at this point in the season. I think they're a huge surprise. I think, you know, Rob Marinelli's got more out of less on defense than maybe any defensive coordinator in the league. Dak Prescott's been an unbelievably pleasant surprise for them. And the Cowboys, instead of, as you say, imploding, seem to have rallied around, you know, their adversity this year. I go through some of the other 3-1 teams. I left one off of there that I thought was really significant too, in that who would have thought that the Patriots, particularly when you talk about 2/3 of their 3 wins have come with, you know, a third string quarterback at the controls, that when Tom Brady had to sit down, that they could come out of 4 games and be 3-1. I think that's a tremendous accomplishment by them. The Falcons surprised me, Neil, because I didn't see this coming. No. I thought they would be explosive on offense, and I think Matt Ryan's kind of riding a real positive wave right now. But they still, there's some deficiencies there. They still can't rush the passer. No. They still don't make enough plays on defense. So I think that'll be an interesting thing to see the way that one goes. I like the Raiders 3-1, not just because I like the Raiders, but I like the Raiders 3-1 because that's been on the road. Those have been tough, hard-fought games. I don't think they're a championship level football team yet. I don't think they're going to win their division, but I think they're going to have a lot to say about who wins their division. And gosh almighty, you got to love David Carr. What a really, really special young talent.
Yeah, Carr, the two touchdowns Carr threw in the fourth quarter, Jeff, were absolute strikes. The one to Crabtree, the way he kind of split the safeties was incredible. And then the game winner right at the back of the end zone was an absolute thing of beauty. Actually, while we're talking of things of beauty, Jeff, you remember I said to you when I came back from one of my training camp trips just how many players can make incredible plays in the NFL? I've said that a few times, haven't I? I feel like it doesn't have to be the star men. One of your guys, and you'll forgive me, I hope, for saying this, Aldrick Robinson is not the number one receiver in the NFL. But you will never see a better catch made at the professional level than his 35-yard touchdown for the Falcons. He gets his right foot down. Gravity and force of nature, his left foot is going to land probably a half yard out of bounds. And he kind of curls his leg round from out of bounds and tiptoes in the end zone for the touchdown. I mean, that showed me every player in the NFL is a special, special talent.
Yeah, you know what? When I coached that kid at SMU, he could run. That was one of the things he could do. He could get vertical on you. And when he got drafted by the Redskins, they wanted him to be a punt returner and big play receiver. He dropped the punt his rookie season. That was the end of his punt return time in the NFL. He had a couple flashes. If you remember the post cut on Thanksgiving against the Cowboys for about 80, he had a couple flashes. But didn't get it done in Washington, went to Baltimore, hung around Baltimore for a year. They cut him. Then he went to Atlanta and got another chance, and he really seems to have taken advantage of the chance. He's grown. He's become more of a complete receiver. I think he's where he needs to be because he can be that guy opposite of a Julio Jones that has vertical speed. He's got better hands than people think, and he's a great kid, so I'm really happy for him that he's having this kind of success in the league.
That group of receivers you had there, Jeff, in college that were all under your position group, Emmanuel Sanders, Cole Beasley, Aldrick Robinson, they're all doing really well, but there's a couple of issues, I think. Cole Beasley joined Terrence Williams in the end zone when he scored and tried to dance with him. Cole can't dance, Jeff, so I don't know what you were teaching him there. And Emmanuel Sanders scored a touchdown and tried to do a cartwheel, and So unless they followed your lead and you're not very good at cartwheeling and dancing, I don't know.
That's where I drew the line. I said, anything you do after you cross the end zone, you're on your own. Everything you do until you get to the end zone is on me. And you know what? And you talk about that. And we had a fourth kid. Now, imagine this at SMU. We had a fourth kid, Darius Johnson, who made the Falcons and actually had seven catches in the game as a rookie.
But
couldn't continue to play at that level. It's now out of the NFL. But that was a special group of guys, and they were really fun to coach. And remember last year at the Super Bowl when we saw Emmanuel? They are such great kids. And when he walked across the room in front of the whole, everybody in the media was there. He walks across the room, and we get a big hug. It was really fun to see him.
Yeah, good to see. That was a great sight from Super Bowl 50. Jeff, just back to the Raiders quickly, because we tried to touch on this in the studio on Sunday night, but obviously we have limited time. I did point out the Raiders are now 3-0 on the road this season, and they're 3-0 going from the West Coast into the Eastern time zone. How difficult is that for players and coaches?
Boy, you got it, Neil. I'm telling you, that's one of the things that I like about this Raider team. You're talking about 3-0 on the road. Winning on the road in the NFL is incredibly hard. Winning any time's hard, but it's really hard on the road. And then if you're a West Coast team and you have to go multiple time zones to play games, now they've had early starts in every single one of their games. The NFL schedule has not been kind to the Raiders. So you're talking about your body your body says it's 9 o'clock or 10 o'clock in the morning when you're playing a noon or a 1 a.m. start on in the central time zone or on the East Coast. So it is really, really difficult. And there's been an NFL study done where they found that the more time zones you cross, the lower your winning percentage is throughout the NFL. So give the Raiders credit for having the mental toughness. And again, here we talk about that thing that, that the coach can interject in his football team. Just like Zimmer put it into the Vikings, I think Jack Del Rio is doing it with the Raiders. And one more shot on the Raiders. It's good to see Khalil Mack got his first sack. That defense has been struggling, giving up 500 yards the first 2 weeks. But they found a way to win. As the defense gets it figured out and they start to play, and I think the change they made at middle linebacker, that young middle linebacker, wow, he had a game.
Jeff, you mentioned one of the 3-1 teams there, the New England Patriots, and they would have taken 3-1 offered to them while Tom Brady was out for sure. There was one thing I wanted to talk about, and we played this in, you know where I do the little bit of the touchscreen highlighting what the games are coming up in the night? And I made them play in the video of the pregame scuffle. The Bills seemed to try and go after Jacoby Brissett. And this was interesting because you can get thrown out of a game for what goes on before it. We've seen that before. The Bengals and Steelers last year went at each other during the pregame stuff. But this was interesting. I didn't realize at the time. I sort of looked in the studio and saw that nobody had been thrown out of the game. When that scuffle took place, there were no officials on the field. That's a tricky grey area for the NFL because players like to get out on the field early. And if the officials aren't out there, then you can have potentially what we had in New England there for a few seconds, which was some pretty ugly scenes.
Yeah, and I think it's something that needs to get addressed, Neil, because you're exactly right. These are high strung, highly competitive guys, and they come from a world where talking junk is just the price of admission. So if you don't have people out there, and I know that I saw that the assistant coaches tried to break it up as fast as they could, but the reality of it is it's the NFL. And when I talk about the NFL, I'm talking about the game management people. It's their responsibility to make sure that this kind of stuff doesn't go on. And, you know, it's very, very difficult, but it's something that we've got. As a game, we don't need those kind of things before a game. I just think that the NFL is going to have to look at this. I mean, whether it's going to be put a preliminary set of officials on the field to police this as soon as the field's open for practice. There are just too many opportunities for this kind of stuff to go on. And, you know, it'd be a shame to lose a player. Think about this, you know, lose a player because a guy takes a shot at another guy pregame and there's nobody on the field to enforce any penalties. Because the officials are, you know, not asked to be out there that early.
You know what kind of tickets Rex was selling, don't you, Jeff?
Ooh, Wolf tickets, 2-for-1. They were on sale in Buffalo. And you know what? It's going to be interesting. You made a great comment in your... And I laughed when I read it. You made a great comment in your 10 things of why you love the NFL this week about Rex was going to be unbearable this week. He's already started. I mean, now he comes out and says I was just BSing about having a source inside the Patriots. The league's just got to shake its head every once in a while with Big Rex. But hey, you got to love him because his impersonation of Walt Podolsky, and for fans that don't have any idea who Walt Podolsky is, Walt Podolsky is a former Buffalo Bill first-round draft choice who was really kind of a flop in the NFL out of Notre Dame. And he says he's Buffalo Daily News Walt Podolsky asking Julian Edelman questions. And Julian Edelman, Walt Podolsky was playing for the Bills before Julian Edelman was born, so Julian Edelman had no idea who Walt Podolsky
was. He was answering the question.
It was priceless.
Yeah, it was brilliant.
It was priceless.
It was. A couple of 1-3 teams then, Jeff. For every yin, there's a bit of yang. And well, the Arizona Cardinals and the Carolina Panthers. Yeah, both teams were in the NFC Championship game last year. Both are big disappointments. And actually, both now have their quarterbacks with some concussion concerns. Let's start with Arizona, Jeff. They just, to me, look... It's just... If you put Arizona on the field and I watch them, I'd say, well, they're not coached by Bruce Arians because they're just... That's not a Bruce Arians team. It's just too sloppy. It's just... It's not explosive on offense. I mean, what a disappointment.
Yeah, Yeah, they are. And you know, and it's really, I got to bite my tongue as I say this. You look at, you know, you look at BA, and that's never been the kind of football team he's ever been associated with, whether it was all the way back in his college days at Temple and, you know, in 1985 or, you know, on through his time as a coordinator with Pittsburgh or New England or, you know, any place he's been. And you know, since he took over the Cardinals, they've always been a resilient, tough, well-coached team that didn't make mistakes and, you know, was explosive on offense and could score from anywhere on the field and, you know, really lived that, you know, on the edge kind of philosophy. Now you look at them and you just don't see that football team. Mm. I know it's interesting. Tyrann Mathieu's comments that he's ready to go back and be that slot corner again and move up from the, you know, the third level, the safety position where they've kind of been babying a little bit, him a little bit because of his knee. And BA says, well, he's ready to go, you know, whenever he tells me he's ready, he's going back there. Well, I think it's time. I think it's time for this football team. If they're going to turn it around, they got to do it now. And, you know, they've kind of got their, you know, they kind of got their nose rubbed in it for the last 4 weeks, especially, you know, to go to Los Angeles and lose to the Rams and, you know, Jeff Fisher take a little bit of a pop shot at Bruce after the game. I think you'll find out who the Arizona Cardinals really are in these coming weeks.
Yeah, looking at the Carolina Panthers, so they dropped to 1-3 as well. Since opening last year, Jeff, 14-0, they've gone 4-5 in their last 9 games. First of all, I want to ask you about Cam Newton, because there was an incident last year where he had no idea the defender was anywhere near him, and he got clocked right near the goal line just as he was diving into the end zone. And I think he had no idea Deion Jones was anywhere near him on Sunday night. So here's my question. Is Cam spending too much time trying to make it look cool as he gets into the end zone? Because to me, he looks distracted at times, and it looks like it's... I can't even believe I've asked you that. That would be ridiculous if the answer was yes. But that's how it comes across, Jeff. It looks like he's trying to put together a little mini highlight reel rather than just, well, this is not going to work out well, but I just got to make sure I get in the end zone. I don't know. It's just, how can you have that little football awareness to not see a defender coming right at you?
Well, I think the thing you got to remember is, you know, that's kind of been his way he's played his entire career. It's hard to make changes with that part of your game. Mm. He's going to have to, though, Neil, because you, as the quarterback of a franchise, and particularly when you're the face of the franchise like he is, and so much of the offense runs through you, you can't expose yourself to those kinds of hits. You know, you can't. That's one of the things that, as I watch Andrew Luck play now compared to what he was when he first came in the league, he's grown that way because he understands, I think, when he's hurt, when he can't function, that football team is really in jeopardy. So Cam, I think, has to somehow find a way to temper that, you know, take that guy that will do the somersault into the end zone to get in there, but also understand you got to sometimes just get in there and then get underneath the pads. June Jones used to say, get underneath the pads and preserve yourself. Because Carolina right now, you talk about a team that's you know, like that fighter who's been hit and hurt and is up against the ropes and just trying to hold on, right? I mean, they're going to probably have to go with Derek Anderson this week, and they got to find some kind of way. But again, you know, you always get exposed for what you truly are in times of adversity. And the reality of it is, they're not. When you got Mike Remmers as your playing left tackle, and I know it's because you know, of an injury, but when you got a guy like that trying to protect a multi-million-dollar quarterback, they're just not good enough in the offensive line, in my opinion, right? Don Matko is one of the best offensive line coaches in football, but they just don't have enough guys.
Well, actually, but are they not versatile enough as an offense? Because when you watch the Panthers, and I'm not a coach, but I can count up to 5 and I can count up to 7, and there are a lot of 5 and 7 step drops in that offense. There is a lot of slow developing, trying to get chunk yardage. Is that part of the problem? They don't do a lot of that quick sort of passing that you see New England do, or even Denver with all the crossing routes and that kind of stuff. Everything's a 20, 25-yard play downfield, and, you know, Cam has to sit there a long time for those plays to develop.
Well, I think you're right in terms of how you have to marry what you have to what you want to get done. Now, Cam's one of the best deep ball throwers in the NFL, so they want him to throw the ball deep, you know. But the reality of it is, if you can't protect and he's throwing in duress or he's throwing and getting hit, you know, that's the risk and reward thing you have to figure out. One of the reasons why I think Belichick is so good, one of the reasons why I'm so impressed with Kubiak is, regardless of the situation at quarterback or even the talent level around them or the injuries or whatever, they seem to be able to adapt what they do to give themselves a chance to win. And right now, Mike Shula in Carolina is faced with that kind of challenge. You know, Ron Rivera in Carolina has got to look at this and say, we're really young on defense. Sean McDermott, the defensive coordinator, has got to look at those two rookie corners he's got out there, or not rookies, I guess second-year corners he's got out there trying to cover guys, and he knows he's deficient in one area. They know they're deficient in the offensive line. They, you know, you got to protect that quarterback. That's football. That's coaching a football team and getting the football team to win. So they've got to adjust what they do and not be hard-headed sometimes about, hey, we need to, like you say, be in these seven-step drops and let him throw the ball down the field. You can take your shots, but you got to handle it by maxing up the protection or off of play action or, you know, whatever else it is. But, you know, if you can't protect the quarterback, you're going to have a hard time in the National Football League.
You mentioned on the defensive side, Jeff, Sean McDermott was trying everything possible to contain Julio Jones, but Julio said after the game he saw way more single coverage than he expected. That was maybe asking for a bit of trouble.
Yeah, and, you know, again, you want to have faith in your guys. You want to have, and I really was interested in Sean's comments after the game, you know, because obviously the media is going to go right after you when you don't sign Josh Norman back, and he's one of the better corners in the league, and you can't get a deal done for him, and so you make this decision. Gettleman makes this decision to go with these young guys. Well, Sean stood up and defended his young corners, but the reality of it is they're still learning. They're still developing. It's all new for them, and they're in there against one of the elite level players in the NFL. And as a coordinator, you got to help. So that's rolling coverage to them, you know, playing more zone than you normally play, playing double zone where there's help on top. You know, those are the things you got to do. And, you know, it's tough because you're trying to win football games, and sometimes you can get overloaded with what you are, what your identity is, or what your system has been, or whatever. And then right now, those corners are getting exposed in what they're doing, and, you know, they're going to have to figure that out and find a way to protect those kids. Because, you know, next week, that tape's going to circulate through the league, and you know, there's people going to be breaking it all down, and they're going to go right after them again.
Yeah, so struggles for the Panthers secondary on a weekend when Josh Norman has his first interception as a Washington Redskin. Jeff, any other business from week 4 before we move on and make our picks for week 5?
Nah, let's go make those picks. By the way, how did we do last week?
I knew you'd ask me that. Well, I can tell you, you've won again. You've won again, man. You went 10 and... Right, so I went 9-6, and you went 10-5. So the week before, I was 7-9, and you were 8-8. Week 2 is missing, and I'm going to find it one day when I find that notebook. But I think you're ahead on the season. Let's put it that way.
Well, I tell you what, Neil, I've been the NFC East.
I picked the Jets, didn't I? I picked the Jets to beat Seattle. Yes. What was I thinking?
I don't know, because I tell you what, Fitz is throwing it to the wrong guys an awful lot right now.
Yeah, 9 interceptions in 2 weeks now for Ryan Fitzpatrick. Let's start with week 5 then, and it's Thursday night football, Arizona at San Francisco.
I just think Arizona's too good. I think San Francisco, you know, you're losing the ball. Bowman, the best player you have on defense, they're struggling on offense. I'm going to go Arizona.
Yep, I'm Arizona as well in that one. I still believe that they can turn it around and be a good team. Here he comes right into the rescue, into the Sunday games then. New England Patriots at the Cleveland Browns. Super Tom is back and surely he gets the win even on the road in Cleveland.
You know what? If you're a Browns fan, you got to kind of just go, well, what's next? Because it's like...
They had the Redskins, Jeff.
Close, they can't.
They had that game and then they go and fumble the ball and...
They always seem to find a way to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory. I mean, it's amazing.
All right, so both going New England to win that one. Just on Tom Brady, Jeff, he's going to be kind of 2007 levels motivation, isn't he? I think he's got that kind of... He's been very quiet, he's kept his counsel, but he's going to want to stick it to the rest of the league now.
Oh, you aren't kidding. The thing that is probably driving him more than anything else is the goal to have the commissioner hand that trophy to him at the end of the season. I think he's probably got that. He's mentally rehearsing that scene, and I'm sure Belichick and Mr. Kraft would be more than happy to stand right there on the podium next to him and enjoy that moment.
Yep. Hashtag awkward. Philadelphia, Detroit. Detroit have been disappointing for me, Jeff. The last couple of weeks, they got that win in Week One, and they blew it at home against Tennessee, and haven't shown up for much of. You know, late comeback against Green Bay, but fell short and just weren't at the races on Sunday. So I've got to go Philadelphia.
Wow, you talk about a game with storylines, right, that you would never anticipate. Here Jim Schwartz comes back to Detroit, where he was the head coach leading that Eagles defense.
Yeah.
Eagles are coming off a bye. Can Peterson keep them focused? Can he keep them, you know, from reading all the hype and all the you know, great comments. Carson Wentz, can you continue to grow as a quarterback? On the other sideline, Jim Caldwell, all they want to talk about is your job, and you know they can't rush the passer and all the things the Lions can't do. I'm going to take the Eagles, but I think that's going to be a close game. This is a critical game for the Lions.
Absolutely. Jeff, the next game I want to talk about just quickly, Chicago at Indianapolis. This is interesting to me as we further test the market here in the UK, because the Colts are the first team never to have a bye after the London games. And I know I checked this out while they were over here and I was doing a little bit of scouring around. They were due to land back in Indianapolis at just 12:30, so their local time. So it wasn't much different than them going out and playing San Francisco or Seattle. So, you know, we'll make our picks in a second, but this is maybe a proving point that teams don't always need that bye week afterwards. It'll be interesting to watch this game and see how the Colts cope. But, you know, they were back home the same time as a team coming back from Seattle, because obviously it was an early kickoff in Wembley.
Right. And you know what, Neil? That's a really, really big point that nobody's made but you in the media. And I'm going to tell you something. This is why I'm rooting for the Colts, because that's going to take away one more argument about why you shouldn't have a team in London. So this week, I'm joining you. I'm climbing right on that Colts bandwagon. I'm leading it. I'm driving those ponies. Let's go, Colts.
You drive it, because I think Andrew's sick of the sight of me. So I'll just sit in the back and carry on riding along, and we'll hope for the best. I'm going Colts to win that one as well. Tennessee at Miami. Ryan Tannehill is developing a habit of getting coaches fired. I don't think he's going to get Adam Gase fired yet, but the Dolphins don't look good. Tennessee have got a much tougher than anticipated defense, Jeff. This is a tough game to call.
Yeah, it is. You know, again, I love the NFL because every game has great storylines, right? Mm-hmm. You know, you're talking about two quarterbacks that are really struggling. You know, Marcus has kind of lost his mojo and lost his way a little bit. The Titans fire their special teams coach after a guy returns a punt in the last minute of the game to beat them. Dolphins, I saw on TV, I saw the reaction of Gase when he came over to Tannehill last week, and that was not a very positive reaction as he turned away from him with that death stare. You know, I just think that this is a game that the Dolphins have to win, and really for the Titans, they need to win this badly also. So I'm going to take the Titans. I just, the Dolphins, there's just something about them. They might be not as cursed as the Browns, but they might be close.
Yeah, I've got a question here out of the mailbag, which I'll do now. It comes from Gareth Davis, who says, guys, do I have any reasons for optimism this season? I'm a Dolphins fan. Gareth, no, you do not. I'm going to take the Dolphins this week, but not for much more. So I'm going Miami, you're going Tennessee, Jeff. Washington at Baltimore. So Washington, improved performance in the red zone, Jeff, because they managed to get some touchdowns last week against Cleveland, but they almost lost that game as well. It's a local derby, this one, isn't it? Local rivals.
Yeah, Yeah, this is a big rival, and I'm gonna tell you something. Redskins got to figure out a way to stop the run. Mm. I mean, their teams are running the ball at an alarming rate against them. You know, the Ravens, boy, they're an ugly team to watch. You know, they're an ugly team to watch, but somehow Harbaugh kind of fills them into position to win football games. I think they're going to win at home. I think it's a big, big game for them, and they know they have to come out and perform. So I'm going to take the Ravens at home.
All right, I'm going to take Washington to win on the road, but I'm going to issue a word of warning to Josh Norman, who likes to get under the skin of opposing wide receivers. Steve Smith will rip your face off, Josh. Don't mess with that
those
man.
Those guys have a history, so this could be fireworks.
This is our first game on Sky Sports on Sunday night, Houston at Minnesota. It's a couple of teams that have lost some star players this season. J.J. Watt for Houston, Adrian Peterson for the Minnesota Vikings. But they're obviously a sum of their parts, Jeff, because the Vikings are 4-0 and the Houston Texans are 3-1.
Yeah, and I'm going to take the Vikings, and I think this is a game that, you know, certainly that Viking defense at home. And then, you know, again, Sam Bradford, 4 touchdowns, no interceptions. If he can continue to play at that. And you know, how about this one? 9 different Vikings caught the ball in that game. 9. That's using all of your roster. And that's what, you know, getting good football teams do.
Well, Jeff, whenever I make notes in the studio in on Sky on Sunday nights, if I spot that stat, I always make a note of it. Because to me, it's an indicator of just how comfortable a quarterback is. If you're hitting 9, 10 different receivers, you are happily spreading the ball around. Is that how you guys see it in the coaching circles?
No question, Neil. And the great thing about that is when you're using everybody on your football team, then everybody feels a part of it. And those backside routes become crisper. Mm-hmm. Those vertical routes where you have to blow the top off the coverage become faster because guys believe that they're not just out there to be a decoy or to block for Adrian Peterson. You know, sometimes football, it sounds crazy. You can lose a superstar and become a better football team. And I think that what's happened, frankly, with the Vikings, they're not so dependent upon one guy on offense. I mean, it's running back by committee. You got 9 different guys touching the ball. And again, I think that's a mark of a team that gets it.
I'm going to go Minnesota as well. I think there's some sloppiness creeping into Brock Osweiler's game, so I'm going Minnesota to win at home and to improve to 5-0. The New York Jets at the Pittsburgh Steelers. I like what I saw out of Pittsburgh, and I like what I saw from their defense for the first time really last week, Jeff, so I'm going Pittsburgh. What about you?
I like the Steelers too. Le'Veon Bell being back, the defense played better. And again, you know, it's 9 interceptions in 2 games. Boy, boy, that's hard to win football games when you're throwing it to the other team that much.
All right. The Atlanta Falcons at the Denver Broncos is our second game on Sky. And here's another little test for the Falcons because they go up against that, what they call it, the no-fly zone, their secondary in Denver. This could be a tough test, but Atlanta will go in with some confidence. And we might see Paxton Lynch, mightn't we, at starting for the full game.
Yeah, you know, I thought he did well, Neil. You know, it's good to see the young kid. You know, it was fun to meet him last year at the Super Bowl, and you know, I thought he handled himself well. He's handled himself well in the preseason games. Got a chance, went in there, and you know, didn't make a lot of plays, but made enough plays, and didn't make bad plays. That's the key. I like the Broncos here because I think defense trumps offense, especially when you're at home in the Mile High City. So I'm going to take the Broncos.
All right, I'm going to take Denver to win that one as well. There might be no Tevin Coleman because there's the 1-2 punch that Atlanta have had at running back with Coleman and Freeman has been very good. But he's got the same thing that Ryan Clark had and missed a few games in Denver during his career, the old Pittsburgh safety, Jeff. The sickle cell trait, which... it's a thing that affects your red blood cells and can be a problem if you play at altitude, can't it? So there might be no Tevin Coleman this week.
Yeah, and that'll be a big loss, you know. And this is not that people that have any, you know, have ever been around that issue. This is not something to play with. And like you say, it can be triggered by, you know, the oxygen deprivation at high levels. So. if I'm the Falcons, I'm gonna sit in and then make sure that we've got him for the rest of the season.
Yeah, Ryan Clark, who I just mentioned, he missed the last two games of his career when he should have played in Denver, because when he played in the first one, he ended up having to have his gallbladder and his spleen removed. So as Jeff said, you don't mess about with it. So there may be no Tevin Coleman this week. Let's move on. Cincinnati at Dallas. I'm probably going to go Dallas at home here, Jeff. I think the shine has come off the Bengals a little bit, and I've got to think it's the amount of people that they lost from that offense from a year ago, and in that I would include offensive coordinator Hugh Jackson.
Yeah, you watched them, and they did enough to win last week. I'm still not sold on them as an elite level team. And then you look at the Cowboys, and Dak Prescott, you got to say, all you can do is count the wins, and he's got three, and I think he's going to get his fourth at home.
All right, both going Dallas. This next game, Jeff, is one of those ones where the sort of classic comment you make where you get bruised just watching it. It's the Buffalo Bills at the Los Angeles Rams.
Man, oh man. All right. Buddy Ryan, head coach of Philadelphia. First defensive coordinator Buddy Ryan hires as a head coach, Jeff Fisher. Jeff Fisher hires Rex Ryan to be his defensive coordinator in St. Louis. Rob is there for about a week and leaves.
Yes.
Greg Williams, the defensive coordinator from St. Louis, was the head coach of the Buffalo Bills and got fired. This one has all the earmarkings of a let's go to the 50-yard line, drop our gloves, and let's just start trading hands.
Yeah, that's just the coaches. That's just the coaches. I mean, it might be the players breaking up the coaches in the pregame in this one.
This one has a chance to be an all-time classic. I mean, this may be last man standing here. Because Greg Williams blitzes more than anybody in the NFL, and they will get off the bus sending the safety. I'm just telling you right now. That's just the way it's going to be. And Tyrod Taylor's a tough guy to blitz because he's got such dynamic ability. I think this is going to be a great football game, but I think it's a tough ask for Buffalo to come off that win in New England, win in Arizona, win against Arizona, and now go to Los Angeles and win on the road. Watch out now. We're starting to talk about Rams as a relevant force in the National Football League. That's been a while.
They back up. So we're both picking the Rams. I'm going Rams in this one. You going Rams?
Yep.
Well, if they win that, Jeff, they'll be 4-1. It'd be incredible after that start as well. San Diego at Oakland.
Hey, Jeff Fisher gets a contract extension for going 8-8. If he's 4-1, they ought to give him a lifetime contract.
They'll give him that Hollywood sign for his back garden if he wants it. San Diego, Oakland. I've got to think Oakland, keep it going. San Diego, another team. Jeff, this is the difference kind of between being a contender and a disappointment. This is a San Diego team now. They should have won in Indianapolis. They didn't close that game out. They give up the long touchdown pass. They have two late fumbles, Melvin Gordon and Travis Benjamin. They had that game under control against New Orleans. They find a way to lose. Contrast that with Oakland, who found a way to win late a couple of times this year. I've got to go Raiders.
Well, I'm going to tell you something. The Raiders are back home in the black hole. This one is going to be an offensive shootout. But I'm going to tell you something, Neil. I think the buzzards are starting to circle in San Diego.
Yeah.
So I'm going with the Raiders.
Careful, you'll wake up them monkeys over there. They'll be attacking you. What time is it there, anyway?
We started at 6 a.m. I don't know what time it is.
6 a.m.? You're having a lie-in. Crikey.
Yeah, I know. That's usually 5 a.m. for me. So
exactly.
I appreciate it.
All right, two to go. Sunday Night Football is the New York Giants at the Green Bay Packers. So I'm going to pick the Packers with home field advantage.
Yeah, I like the Packers. And again, I think their defense is kind of living up to expectations a little bit. They got a young corner that's learning on the job. But, the Giants, to me, just there's something about them I just can't buy. To me, what the Giants need to do is have a dominant performance and play like they're capable of playing. And I just think that's a tall ask in Lambeau, so I'm taking Packers.
All right. Monday Night Football to finish off is the Tampa Bay Buccaneers at the Carolina Panthers. Dirk Cutter says he's very concerned with the form of Jameis Winston. And obviously the big man upstairs is not happy with the Buccaneers, Jeff, because he has sent two biblical storms Tampa's way over the past two weekends.
Well, all I know is that if a herd of locusts descend on Tampa, then I'm not really worried. But right now, it's the Panthers coming in, not the locusts. So I think, especially if Cam's out and they got to play with Derek Anderson, I think Tampa at home. Now this is going out on a limb a little bit. Cause
Jeff, just so it doesn't affect your pick. Yeah. Sorry, it's in Carolina.
Oh, okay. Well, then I'm going to go Carolina. Excuse me. I thought it was in Tampa.
Yeah, no, that's me misleading you. Sorry.
He started talking all that biblical stuff, and you scared me, man.
We're both going Carolina there, then. That wraps up our picks. We are running out of time. So much to talk about, Jeff, isn't there? We could do a two-hour one of these every week. Let me just find a quick question from the mailbag. Let's have a look and see what we've got here. All right, you mentioned him a little bit, Jeff, but this is from Andy Threlfall, who says, how impressed were you with Paxton Lynch when he took over for Trevor Siemian? Jeff, I noted he looks like a good fit for Gary Kubiak's offense. He can move around for a big guy, and they kind of bootlegged him out there a little bit, but I guess he would be a fit because they drafted him in the first round. You wouldn't want to take somebody who wasn't, but they do seem intent on handing him the long-term reins. We just don't know when that will be.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that when we evaluated the quarterbacks, when you and I sat down and we talked about the quarterbacks at the draft, the thing that we thought was such a great fit for Denver was his ability to throw on the run, was his athleticism. The guy's 6'7", but he can get outside the pocket and look at when Kubiak's offense has been its best. When Elway was running out of the pocket and running the zone play and coming out on the nakeds and the bootlegs, and then when he had Schaub in Houston and they were doing the same things with him. There are two things you got to have in that offense. Number one, you got to have a tight end, a valid tight end. And number two, you got to have a quarterback that can throw on the run and you have some mobility. Paxton Lynch has all the mobility, all the arm, all the physical tools, all the mental tools. I think the kid's going to be a great one.
All right, good stuff. Jeff, what are you up to today?
Today I'm going to surf if the rain stops. And right now I'm up for another cup of coffee. Even the monkeys aren't coming out today. It's raining so hard. But, hey, Neil, you know what? You made a great point. We could do a two-hour one of these every week. Or when I get out there in about 5 weeks, let's do two a week. Let's really get into the nuts and bolts of it.
Now you're talking, Jeff. Get an email off to Alistair Kirkwood, and we'll see what we can work out. But listen, have fun surfing. Stay safe, because it was not that long ago you were like disappearing under waves and stuff. So be careful. don't have to. Talk,
all right, thanks.
I don't have to talk to myself for an hour. All right, I want you back next week. One piece.
All right, man. You take care.
No, say goodbye to the good folks, Jeff.
Aloha.